You may approach, and good morning to you.
May it please the court. My name is Christopher Eichel, representing the appellant in this case with Christopher Rogers. This is a direct appeal from the Lancaster County District Court following Ms. Rogers' conviction at trial for the charge of possession of a controlled substance. We've alleged two assignments of error in our brief. One assignment relates to the error that the district court made in not suppressing the stop, detention, and ultimate seizure and arrest of Ms. Rogers and the items found in her purse, and also the excessive sentence that the court imposed after Ms. Rogers was found guilty. With respect to the suppression issue, to kind of remind the court of the facts, on August 5th, 2015, Lincoln Police Officer Megan Schreiner was on patrol duty in the near south area. Earlier that morning, she had seen a woman who she knows personally as Christina Wakefield, who was 21 years old at the time of this incident, and Officer Schreiner had seen her on 11th Street in Lincoln, Nebraska. Later that morning on her shift, Officer Schreiner learned that Ms. Wakefield was wanted on a federal indictment warrant. She learned that from other police officers. And at that point, Officer Schreiner explained to the task force who was looking for Ms. Wakefield that she had seen her over on 11th Street earlier that day. Officer Schreiner did not read the federal indictment warrant. She was unfamiliar with the facts, but she did know that Ms. Wakefield was with another young person in a Chevy Cavalier with 11 county plates. Ultimately, Ms. Officer Schreiner went over to 11th Street, where she had seen Ms. Wakefield earlier that day. At that time, she did see Ms. Wakefield's vehicle, or the 11 county vehicle Ms. Wakefield's in, but when Officer Schreiner approached the 11th Street residence where she had seen Ms. Wakefield, she saw a Hyundai Sonata that was not near the 11 county Chevy Cavalier, but near enough where she thought, Officer Schreiner thought, that perhaps Christina Wakefield was in that Hyundai Sonata. Officer Schreiner stopped her marked police cruiser in the middle of the street. She did not park it, but she stopped it, not completely blocking the flow of traffic. Officer Schreiner walked on foot toward the Hyundai Sonata. And Officer Schreiner explained that she did so because she was concerned that the Sonata was going to leave the scene. Officer Schreiner could not exactly remember whether the Sonata was moving or intending to move, but the impression that Officer Schreiner had was that vehicle was going to leave. And as the district court found, the reason that Officer Schreiner contacted that vehicle is because she was concerned that Ms. Wakefield was in that car. Our position, under the reasoning of Walt, that is a second-tier seizure of that vehicle. It's based on nothing more than a hunch, but assuming, under the reasoning of Walt, that the officer has at least some sort of reason to contact to make sure that Ms. Wakefield is not in that Sonata, she was within her authority to do so. As we argued at the trial level and as we argue in our brief, Officer Schreiner knew the driver of that Sonata as a person by the name of Scott Staber. She immediately could see Mr. Staber and immediately recognize him. She could also see very easily into the Sonata itself. Her vision was not obstructed. It was daylight. There was no tint to the windows. It's our position that the instant that Officer Schreiner sees that Ms. Wakefield was not in that Sonata, that ends her detention. That Sonata. That person should have been allowed to leave. And instead, what you have after Officer Schreiner admitted that she contacts the occupants of the Sonata, she realizes Ms. Wakefield's not in there, acting on a hunch, as Officer Schreiner says she had, because she knows Mr. Stakeberg, she knows that earlier that summer some people were staying with him in a nearby residence, may have been involved in drugs, and Officer Schreiner begins a fishing expedition.
I know you're trying to explain this, but why is this not a first-tier encounter?
It's not a first-tier, and the state responded in their brief, the appellee did, that this is similar to the Gilliam first-tier. It's different from Gilliam in a couple of respects. This court was clear in Gilliam that overhead lights standing alone does not arise to a second-tier detention or seizure. When you look at what a reasonable, prudent person would consider in this situation, overhead lights, you see them in other police vehicles, other vehicles all the time, and that standing alone is not necessarily something that a reasonable person would interpret as being directed toward him or her. But in this instance, you have a police car stopped in the middle of the street, doesn't park, an officer walking toward you, making eye contact with you. A reasonable person at that point thinks something is going on here of an investigative or criminal nature or something, and the officer is coming toward me, not walking down the sidewalk. Officer Schreiner couldn't recall if she said or directed non-verbally, similar to what the officer did in Bolt, anything. But in this case, looking at the totality of the circumstances, it was a seizure. The trial court sort of acknowledges that, even though the court concluded that it was a first here in its findings. The court is not only listed on page 6 of the appellate's brief, that Officer Schreiner testified that she was not to leave the area without first ensuring that Wakefield was not in the car. So the trial court implicitly found, we would argue, that this was a seizure. The whole point of her contacting Sonata is to keep her from going in, to see if Wakefield is in it.
Counsel, if we disagree with the premise that this began as a second-tier encounter, if we agree with the trial court that it began as a first-tier encounter, what's your best argument about when it became a second-tier encounter and what reasonable suspicion existed or did not exist at that point?
If it is a first-tier encounter, it's our position that the instant that Officer Schreiner recognizes Mr. Staberg and has a hunch that he might be involved in criminal activity, that's when it rises to second tier. Her questioning then becomes directly toward him, asking what he's up to, what's going on. She directs the passenger not to move in the car. She's making directive orders to the passenger not to reach under his seat, not to do that sort of thing. She begins to look inside the car where she claims that she sees a plastic bag in the back seat, or the back seat area. And as Officer Schreiner acknowledged, once she realized that Ms. Wakefield's not in the car, she had nothing more than a hunch. And there is no reasonable suspicion. It's a general, unparticularized hunch or feeling that Scott Staberg might have something to do with drugs, maybe the people in the car with him.
To what extent is the party's location in this automobile affecting your analysis of the nature of the encounter? If we assume for the moment that they were standing outside the automobile, adjoining it on the side of the curb, and the same things happened, wouldn't we be looking initially at a first-tier encounter?
I think if the parties were not in the vehicle.
Okay, and then at what point, assuming everything else is the same except they're on the curb instead of in the vehicle, at what point would it rise to a second-tier encounter?
This is assuming that the individuals are not in the vehicle.
Not in the vehicle.
If they were not in the vehicle, according to the court's hypothetical, or the government's hypothetical, if they were not in the vehicle, I would respond that it becomes a second-tier if their restriction from walking away from the vehicle is limited.
So, to return then to the vehicle situation, what is it about the circumstances here as the officer approaches that imposes some limitation or would reasonably be considered as imposing a limitation on leaving?
First, you have an officer who's approaching you on foot and the officer is in the street. I think a reasonable person is not just going to somehow drive and weave around the standing or walking officer and her police cruiser that's parked in the street. I think a reasonable person looking at the totality of the circumstances is going to think this is directed toward me. I better stay here and see what this officer wants. I'm not free to leave. And Officer Schreiner acknowledged, although she could not recall specifically whether the car Sonata was in gear, started, but the impression that Officer Schreiner had was that people were intending on.
I'm having trouble reconciling how your argument would not inevitably lead to every, what appears to be a first-tier encounter associated with a vehicle suddenly, because of there's a vehicle involved, is automatically a second-tier encounter. How would you envision that a first-tier encounter would occur with a vehicle that didn't occur here?
In this instance, if you have the officer perhaps park a car illegally, if you have the officer not walking in the middle of the street in front of the Sonata, and then the officer engaged in conversation with the people in the Sonata, that is what would argue is not police not dominating necessarily, but not police control. In other words, it is a truly consensual, agreeable contact that the citizen is having with the officer. I mean, if you look at the totality of the case, there's a gathering police presence, because remember, the other officers are on the scene arresting Ms. Wakefield out of the car along with her passenger, on the warrant.
So at some point, we have a convergence.
Exactly right.
But that occurs at some point after the initial contact is made, correct?
At some point, but I think that it may be close in time.
All right.
And just briefly, we would argue the sentence itself is excessive on the second point. The court made no specific findings whatsoever, and I just submitted the argument.
Thank you very much. Mr. Meyer, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Joe Meyer. I'm an assistant attorney general here on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. The state submits that the district court did not err in overruling the motion to suppress. Also, the sentence in this case was not excessive. I tend to focus my arguments mostly on the suppression issue and submit the sentence issue brief unless there are other further questions. Opposing counsel's recitations of the facts were pretty accurate. The state doesn't take any real issue with that. As the state in my brief, the state submits that it was a first-tier encounter, similar to recent cases this court has decided. There was Gilliam, maybe more recently, the state versus Milos. Milos may actually be more appropriate. I did not mention that one in my brief. Here you have Officer Schreiner parking the vehicle, walking up to the vehicle and basically doing what this court has allowed in Gilliam and Milos.
Is where the officer parked the car here a significant factor? Is that a major kind of thing? Did she, in essence, block any possibility of leaving?
No. The evidence in the record makes clear that Officer Schreiner testified that the Hyundai could have simply just pulled straight in front, could have just driven straight and gotten out of the situation without avoiding. There was no weaving required for the driver to avoid the patrol car. There is no evidence that there was weaving involved to even avoid the officer. And that was mentioned in Milos, the fact that those police officers did not block in the suspect's vehicle was an issue. It was a determination for this court to determine that it was a Tier 1 encounter. And as mentioned, there's no overhead lights. The state believes that if in Gilliam, the use of overhead lights was not, there has to be some show of force or show of authority, and the person has to succumb to that show of authority. The state believes the case law is. And simply the officer parking in the middle of the street is not a show enough of authority in walking up. There's also State versus Casillas. I mean, it's pretty well established in the state's view that police officers are allowed to approach someone in a public setting, ask them questions, and ask for identification. And that is what happened in this case.
The state concedes that at some point this became a second-tier encounter, correct?
Correct.
When did that happen, and what was the evidence of reasonable suspicion at that point?
The state would suggest that it became second-tier when Officer Schreiner requested the police canine unit. The evidence of reasonable suspicion at that point was Officer Schreiner recognizing the driver as someone involved in methamphetamine sales. Methamphetamine dealing. The evidence pretty much was that the driver would allow people to live in his residence who were selling methamphetamine. There had been some methamphetamine surveillance at his residence. The evidence also shows that almost immediately the first thing that Officer Schreiner sees when she approaches the vehicle is the passenger reaching under the seat, some fertile movements.
That's the front seat passenger, not the in this case, correct?
Correct. A third piece of reasonable suspicion would be the baggie, the portion of the baggie seen on the top of Ms. Ryder's purse. The record isn't entirely clear, and there was also some information of what was called narcotics intelligence related to the front seat passenger that had gained sometime after the additional officers arrived.
But wasn't there a warrant? Front seat passenger.
Yes, he was arrested on
the neither the district court's order nor the state's brief in this case addresses the effect of the occupants being requested or directed to exit the vehicle. What significance does that happen? When did it happen, and what significance does that have?
It's not entirely clear when it happened.
Well, it happened before the request for the drug dog.
Absolutely.
We know that much.
Absolutely.
So why isn't that the point at which this advances to a second-tier encounter? And if it is, what was the state of the knowledge of reasonable suspicion at that point?
The Miles case directs that, or addresses that, saying an officer's request that an individual step out of a parked vehicle does not automatically transform a Tier 1 police citizen encounter into a Tier 2 encounter. Miles suggests that the court needs to take a totality of the circumstances approach. Casillas was a case where this court held that when Casillas was asked to step out of his truck and submit to a field sobriety test, did the encounter rise to a Tier 2 investigatory stop? So here, the state would say the totality of the circumstances, most importantly, the furtive movements, if the officer testified, would either be indicative of some sort of contraband being underneath the seat. For officer safety, the officer requests that and there's no evidence really of whether it was a request, whether it was an order. There's no real, what even officer made the directive or made the request for these people to leave the car. As far as reasonable suspicion, at that point, the state submits that all those three previous items I mentioned, the baggie would be the only one that happened in between when they were asked out of the car.
What's the evidence of a glimpse of the baggie? When was that observed?
The officer said that she observed that when no one was in the car. And she sees a purse on the floorboard of the passenger seat. It would have been
when no one is in the car.
Yeah.
Okay, so that wouldn't be relevant to asking folks to exit.
No. When they're asked or ordered to exit, to leave, the officer would have had her personal knowledge of the driver being involved in drug sales of some degree, and then the furtile movements of the front seat passenger. Courts may be aware of cases where this court has held that furtile movements can lead to reasonable suspicion. Gutierrez from the Court of Appeals, and I'm going to butcher it, which is Hosky, 271 Nebraska 64. In those cases, the courts have said that passenger reaching under the seat of a car is a basis of reasonable suspicion. And so then, after the drug dog is requested, then it becomes an issue of reasonableness. The court looks to the length of the detention and then also the detention means. State versus Lee, 265 Nebraska 663, allowed for a 20-minute wait. The testimony in this case was that the drug dog and officer were there within 10 minutes. So from the point a drug dog is requested, we believe everything was reasonably done. And if there are no further questions, we would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.